Go ahead.
Good morning, it's approximately 1:00. This is a meeting of the city of Milwaukee today on January 25th. Could we have a call of the roll, please?
Sure, Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Kovak, not present as yet. Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Quorum.
All right, I think the first order of business is to introduce our new board member, Molly, and welcome her, Molly King Christensen. She knows our operations well. She's here, our budget director, or budget analyst, I should say. So welcome to the board, Molly.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Well, no strange to the board and Jerry, the administration team. I just want to tell everyone I really highly appreciate all the work that both the board and the administrative team has put into this plan. I look forward to serving and working alongside each one of you. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, and thank you for volunteering to put forth the time required. The next item of business is election of officers. And the first office that we have to deal with is the chair.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I've got a message from Mr. Kovac, Alderman Kovac. His link isn't working, Terry. Maybe you can work on that for him so we can join the meeting and participate in this.
Okay, well,
meanwhile,
just got in.
Are you in?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to actually type the password in this time. It wouldn't let me do it automatically. I got it. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry for the interruption.
Yeah, I think before we proceed with that, I have to ask Mr. Tzatziki, who is everyone participating in this meeting?
Sure.
In addition to the board members.
Okay. I'll go with roll call. Read off everybody's name. Got Assistant City Attorney Jim Carroll, Ms. Sawa, Mr. Gopalan, Mr. Silver, Ms. Ford, Mr. Sawa, Mr. Shober, Mr. Allen, Mr. Campbell, Ms. Turk, Mr. Bell, Ms. Johnson, Ms. King, Alderman Kovac, Mr. McLean, Mr. Conrad, Mr. Cortright, Mr. Klusman, and Mr. Lubarski. Oh, Ms. Wills and Terry Siddiqui.
Okay, thank you. So we'll now proceed with item 2A, election of the chair. Are there any nominations?
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Campbell.
Yes, Mr. Campbell.
I would like to nominate you, Mr. Conrad, for the position of chair.
Well, thank you. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Well, there appears no other nominations. I'm not saying it's necessary to take a vote if there's only one nomination.
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Campbell. Did we get a second? Did somebody second my motion?
Mr. Bell second.
Okay.
Mr. Bell seconds. Okay, well, I guess we should have a vote. Would you call a roll, please?
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford? Ms. Ford?
You're muted, Ms. Ford.
Ms. Ford?
Ms. Ford, you're still muted. I don't know if you were trying to say something.
Can she raise her hand?
If you want to just type in the chat, that would go too.
Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman? Mr. Klusman?
Can you hear me now?
Is that you, Mr. Klusman?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Kovac? Mr. Kovac?
I said aye, did you hear me?
Oh, yes, now I did, thank you. Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
And Ms. Ford?
I think she dropped out. She's probably trying to reconnect at this point.
Okay, well, we have a quorum.
So we have a majority?
Majority.
Great. Okay, well, thank you very much. It's very exhilarating to win a highly contested election. The next item is the election of the vice chair. Are there any nominations? Are there any nominations? I nominate Mr. Bell to be vice chair.
I would like to second that nomination. This is Molly King.
I'd like to make a correction there. I'd like to nominate Mr. Campbell to be vice chair. My intent is to appoint Mr. Bell to be to the investment committee. So I'm sorry, I'd like to nominate Mr. Campbell as vice chair.
This is Molly King. I'd like to second that nomination for Mr. Campbell as vice chair.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations? Well, here are no other nominations. I'll call for a vote.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
She's not back.
Okay. Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman? Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
And Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Majority.
Okay, thank you. And I will, the next meeting, give you the appointments to the various committees. If anyone's interested in serving these committees, please contact me and let me know of your interest, or contact Mr. Allen and he'll let me know. The next item on the agenda, and the congratulations, Mr. Bell, on your election. Excuse me, Mr. Campbell.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Truth be told, people have been confusing myself and Mr. Bell since we were in grade school together in the same room, so it's not the first time that it's happened. Honored to have the opportunity to do this, but thank you for your leadership, stepping up to take the chair position and make a commitment to not only the board, but the rest of the city. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And thank you for taking up the vice chair position. And I know you're very busy, so it's a big commitment, I think, for you to make. The next item is approving the minutes of the meeting of November 23rd, 2020. Does anyone have any questions concerning those minutes? Okay, hearing none, could we have a motion to approve the minutes?
This is Aichel, I'll make the motion.
Thank you. Could we have a second?
Campbell, I will second.
All right, hearing no objection, the minutes are approved. The next set of minutes is the minutes for the regular meeting held December 17, 2020. Any comments on those minutes? All right, could I have a motion to approve those minutes?
I have a motion.
We have a second.
Campbell, I will second.
Thank you. Hearing no objection, we approve the minutes of December 17th. The next item is the Chief Investment Officer's report, which I will give, and it's as follows. At its January 14th meeting, Dan Fuss of Uber Sales provided the committee with his insights on the global investment environment, geopolitics, and climate change. Dan also mentioned that March 1st is his 45th anniversary at Loomis Sales, and he will be moving into a senior advisory role at that time.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Mr. Klusman here. I think you're confusing the Chief Investment Officer report with your Investment Committee report. I think David is up as item 3, 4.
You're correct, Mr. Klusman. I did jump the gun there. So we will go to David and hear his report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn it over to, I'll pass it on to Mr. Sauer, who's prepared to give an update, performance update to the board this morning.
Sorry.
Morning, everyone.
Sorry to interrupt for a quick second, Mr. Terry. Does the person who joined with a number ending with 20, could I know who that is, please?
That would be me, because for some reason I can't get back to the internet, so I'm on my phone.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
No, that's all right. So the fund ended the year on December 31st with a value of $5.53 billion. December was another month that really saw a continuation of the risk-on trade that started in November, and that led to a return of 4.4% net of fees for the month for the fund, which outperformed the blended benchmark by 111 basis points. The December relative performance drivers, it was primarily manager selection. We had some very strong private equity reports come in, which added 38 basis points to returns. UBS had a very strong month, added 16 basis points. Newton added 9 basis points, and Loomis Sales added 7 basis points. Style bias was another contributor, and this was primarily the fund's small cap bias, as small caps outperformed both in the U.S. and internationally, that added 13 basis points to returns. For the full year of 2020, the private equity asset class outperformed its benchmark net of fees, and while we won't have official real estate figures until Callan calculates them as they're the official real estate record keeper. Unofficially, it does look like real assets outperformed its benchmark net fees as well. 9 out of the 16 active managers that we had for the full year outperformed net fees. The fund generated investment gains of $326.4 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $444.3 million, and received contributions of $124.4 million. As of January 21st, the fund was up approximately 1.9% month to date, which brought the approximate value to $5.71 billion. 8 out of the 14 active managers that we have data so far are outperforming. We don't have anything for AQR or UBS yet, as they only report at month end. So we'll get indications on how they're doing early in February. So far, in 2021, the fund has generated investment gains of $107.7 million. No benefits or expenses yet. We have received $73.9 million in contributions, and the city also made an $8 million contribution to the reserve fund. We'll be withdrawing $10 million from Castle Arc and $8 million from AQR this month. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Starr. Are there any questions on the report? All right. Hearing none, we'll go on to the next item, item 5.
Oops. Mr. Chairman, I'll just add that I don't have a lot to add, but we have an upcoming investment committee meeting. Our next one's on Thursday, February 11th. So we're working hard to put together kind of the final 2020 investment presentations, and we're also working, coordinating with Callan on other parts of the agenda. We do expect it to be a full agenda, just as a heads up. And, you know, as always, if you ever have any investment questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions or discussion? No? All right, we'll go to item number five, which I began earlier, the investment committee report, which is brief. At its January 14th meeting, Dan Foss of Luma Sales provided the committee with his insights on the global investment environment, geopolitics, and climate change. Dan also mentioned that March 1st is his 45th year anniversary of Luma Sales, and he will move into a senior advisor role at that time. Dan mixed in both optimistic views as well as notes of caution throughout the presentation. He introduced Brian Kennedy, who is one of the three more other experienced and long-term tenured portfolio managers who works on the bond strategy the fund invests in. Dan also emphasized how special it has been to manage money for the City of Milwaukee RS over the years. There are no approval items for this meeting. The next item is item number six, the Administrative and Operations Committee report. Could we have that report, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. This is Matt Bell. We had a committee meeting this morning at 8:30 prior to this meeting, and it was myself talking about the approval of the CLA contract. Prior to that, there was some question about, do we need to go into closed session first, or we're good?
Well, that's my question to you. Do we need to go into closed session and discuss this further, or can we just vote approval? But we do have a closed session notice, so I see you're hesitant to go further in open session, so.
Mr. Conrad, this is Mr. Allen.
Yes.
I think you can just go ahead and vote for approval. There's really no reason to discuss the details of the contract. Was all favorable, as Mr. Bell will explain.
All right,
okay. Yes, I don't think there's a need to go into closed session. Then we can, we agreed to go forward with the approval of the CLA contract.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Klusman.
Klusman here. Maybe the big answer, maybe this came up in the A&O committee. I wasn't able to on at 8:30 to see, but a question regarding the paperwork that we received on this, and I don't think it's a closed session issue, but being that there, it may sound kind of picky, but being as this is an internal audit contract we're signing, I noticed that the company in the contract, Milwaukee, yet it's honor a one with Innovation Drive, which is not the City of Milwaukee. But then within the documents that they also provide us, on page 4, they again list that Milwaukee address, but then on page 7 of that same document where they outline their, they list it as Wauwatosa, which is correct for six times over for their staff. It seems kind of archaic that they don't really aren't consistent with what city they're in, and they're incorrect in several places. And again, because they're auditing firm, I'd expect a little more. Was that asked of them? Why they do that?
Jim, this is Jerry and Ellen. Jim, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Jerry.
As you went over the contract with the firm, was there any discussion? I'm not sure what the reason for, but Mr. Klugman has noted, was there any idea what that's about? Is there staff in separate quarters or something?
I am not aware of, I certainly appreciate the point that's being made about that, Ethan. Since it's not something that was discussed, and frankly, it's not something on which I was focused, but I mean, I agree that there is that inconsistency. I don't think it's something that would be difficult to resolve such that the contract accurately reflects the correct address. I certainly think it should be corrected, but it is not something that came up. It's not something as far as a legal issue that I personally was looking at.
Material, but it's, you know, they should clean up their stuff.
Perhaps the board could vote for a technical correction. Jim, would that be appropriate?
Yes, I don't think that would require, you know, the board to reconvene, or I mean, the board can just approve, if it wishes, can approve the contract subject to that important but relatively minor technical correction.
Jim, just to be clear here, so I was at the meeting either. The address spread out in the street, then the number is the same, just that some portions they say Wauwatosa, and some people tend to do, even if they don't live in the city, and some portions they say Milwaukee. Is that the issue?
That's my understanding from the explanation that was just given a minute ago. So yes, I think that's the only issue.
Sorry. So the motion would be to approve the CLA contract subject to correction of the location of their office in terms of the municipality it's located in, and the correct location would be Wauwatosa. Is that a correct statement of the motion?
Yeah, if you want me to make it.
Well, as chair, I state the motion, and then someone has to move approval.
I'll second it, because doesn't the chair make the motion to approve?
No, the chair doesn't make the motion. The chair just states the motion.
No, I mean the chair of the committee.
Oh, well, all right. Well, we'll leave it. I've stated the motion. Is there any? I've stated the motion. Is there anyone moving to approve?
I would move to approval of the CLA contract with that minor technical change.
Councilman will second that.
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded. Are there any objections? No objections being heard. The motion is approved. The next item is item number 7, which is new business. The first item is authorization to sign vouchers.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Allen. This is a routine annual housekeeping item. However, there's nothing been routine about our whole experience in the COVID emergency drill. So I guess we're going to have to circulate this amongst the various parties that are listed here. These are authorized signers, and it's for the custodian. Ms. Wills and I will make sure this gets circulated in a timely manner. We've got a lot of people circulated with. So we'll get that done in time to conduct business. If the board would agree to approve it as a routine housekeeping item. Thank you.
Do we need approval of that, Mr. Allen?
I guess it would be in order, just to in case you wonder what there's, unless there's any objection to the, or addition to names on the list. We put them on because we understood it to be.
All right.
It's a resolution, so it should be approved, I guess.
All right, so the question is to approve the authorization to sign vouchers as the voucher is drafted. Do we have a motion? All right, Mr. Gutt.
Kovac, we'll move so, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. Do we have a second?
Form a second.
Okay.
Okay, motion has been moved and seconded. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the motion is approved. The next item is retirement death claims and refunds for December. Mr. Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your packs, you have the normal monthly routine approval of the payroll for retirement death claims and refunds. There's nothing unusual to note this time, at least I don't think so, but if anybody has any questions or comments, I'll be happy to take them now or at any point in the future. Otherwise, it just approval is required to, you know, to finalize the payroll and make payments for this. Yeah.
All right, any questions on that? Hearing none, we'll go to item number three, conference requests. Mr. Allen?
We need approval.
I believe we have one conference request for Mr. Silver. He would like to attend a telephonic conference, and I'm fumbling with my papers here. David, you want to speak to that briefly? In fact, for some reason, it's not showing up in my file.
That's fine.
Oh yeah, it's a CFA society.
Yeah, this is a request for a CFA society online. Costs $20.
Yes, $20, and it's Ben Inker, who's a notable speaker and is one of our asset management firms, and we've seen Ben before, and he's very knowledgeable.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve this.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. Motions, the request has been approved and seconded. Hearing no objections, the motion passes. The next item.
Could Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is separate from what you just approved, but it is potentially related to conferences. This came up at the investment committee meeting with Dan Fuss. He is presenting on February 10th. It's similar to what I just the event that I just you just approved me for. CFA Society Milwaukee has a fireside chat. They're calling it fireside chat with Dan Fuss. Good to one on February 10th, and I'm not sure. I know for members there's no fee. I'm not sure if it would cost, if there would be a nominal like $15 or $20 fee if any board member. I know that many of you have done in person in the past and enjoyed it. So if there is anybody who's interested in getting registered for that February 10th Dan Fuss presentation, I'm just let Jerry or I know it. We'll coordinate that. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to find out online whether or not there was a charge for it, but my guess is that you would, as a board, support that, and maybe we just report it after the fact if there is a cost.
Okay, Mr. Silver, yeah, I think what we approved is for you to go to FSA Society meeting, which is just tomorrow, right? Tomorrow. But you're talking about one on February 10th, which is the one that Mr. Fuss will be presenting or giving his speech, and he does every year. So if anyone's interested in attending that remotely or online, they should let Mr. Allen or Mr. Zilber know. Is that correct?
Yes, that requesting. It says a heads up, there might be a nominal cost that we would have to report to the board after the fact. But I think that you've supported that in the past.
Yeah, I don't think there would be an issue with that.
Thank you.
Mr. Conrad, could we also get a motion on the retirements, death claims, and refunds? Motion and a second.
A motion to approve?
On the retirements, death claims, and refunds.
Okay, yes. Do we have a motion to approve the retirement death claims and refunds?
Mr. Campbell will make the motion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Campbell. Is there a second?
This is Mike Jones. Second.
Thank you. Okay, the retirement death claims and refunds have been approved. Next item is item D, approval of the 2020 securities lending budget. Any comments on that, Mr. Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is another annual routine housekeeping item where the board is asked to consider sweeping the securities lending revenue into the combined fund as required under the terms of the global pension settlement. And the figure that we have for earnings this year is $798,000. And David or Eric, do you have any comments about the results of the SEC lending revenues?
I don't have many prepared remarks. I mean, I think this is pretty consistent with last year. I think you can see on the what was distributed with the board, it looks like about $815,000 was maybe swept last year. So this year, looks like Dan go on the other's report, but it looks like that number is pretty close to that. I think one thing that's interesting, I think, on the report is that, I mean, when there is market volatility, there often tends to be more short selling. You can see how that did impact the numbers in potentially April and May, June and July, where there was more revenue than some of the other months. And just more of an observation, but that often happens in times of market stress, and you see securities lending revenue and activity creep up a little bit. I don't know if Dan had any comments. He's the person that prepared this report or not.
Yeah. Well, this is Mr. Allegan. I'll just note one thing for the board again, that we're required to sweep this into the combined fund. We're going to take advantage of it. Otherwise, it remains in one of the other little funds as the residual. And then, of course, the securities lending activity, Northern Trust is the manager for this. The dollars involved are significant, but we have very favorable arrangement with them. David, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe our split is 80% for the fund and 20% for Northern. Is that correct?
You're exactly correct.
So with that said, I guess that's our report. And Mr. Chairman, we'd like to call for so that we can sweep this into the fund.
All right, so the item for the board is approval of the 2020 securities lending budget. And the vote would be to approve. So do we have a motion to approve?
Motion.
Well, thank you. Do we have a second? Mr.
Clifford.
Okay, thank you. The motion has been approved and seconded. Hearing no objections, motion passes. The next item E, is the annual obligation of trustees and ERS officers to submit annual statements of economic interest. This is here as a, not as an approval item, but just as a reminder to the trustees and ERS officers that their annual statement of economic interest is due on February 28th. Do you have any comments, Mr. Allen?
No, we'll remind everybody once again, but it's like another one of the housekeeping items for the new year. And it does apply to all the trustees and the officers. And King Christensen, I believe you probably already filled yours out, right? There's a 10-day requirement for new officials.
Yeah, I already filled it out and submitted to Molly Steele.
Okay, very good. Otherwise, everybody, good luck, and we'll come back at the next board meeting and remind everybody before the end of February that they do need to do this. So I guess the ethics board is serious about this, and I think they levy a $50 fine per day on anybody that doesn't complete this. So please, everyone, do this so that we don't have any difficulty. I don't want anybody to run afoul. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you. The next item is approval of resolution for annuity and pension board chair and board member, Sergeant Carmelo Patti. Mr. Allen, do you have that resolution?
I do. I'll read this. This is from our friend and colleague, Sergeant Patti, who's served on more than one term with this board. So I'll go ahead and read the resolution. Whereas Sergeant Carmelo J. Patty, trustee of the Annuity and Pension Board, conscientiously served in the above capacity from February 2019 through December 2020 and represented the system during his tenure of office, and whereas Sergeant Patty's knowledge of pension benefits and his prior service on the Annuity Pension Board enabled him to make a valuable contribution to the Annuity and Pension Board and well-being of the employees' retirement system of the City of Milwaukee and its thousands of participants, and whereas Sergeant Patty served diligently as the chair of the Annuity and Pension Board from January 2020 through December 2020, and served as a member of the Administrative Operations Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board from February 2020 through December 2020, during which time he oversaw the continued successful operation of the ARS, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. And whereas Sergeant Patty served on the Investment Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board throughout his tenure, assisting in the development and implementation of the employee retirement system's highly successful investment policy, which has generated several billions of dollars of returns for the exclusive benefit of the system's members and beneficiaries. And whereas Sergeant Patty's departure will be a great loss to the Annuity and Pension Board and members of the employee retirement system, therefore be it resolved by the Annuity and Pension Board that it hereby expresses its sincere appreciation for the valuable and conscientious service of Sergeant Patty, and be it further resolved that this resolution be reported in the permanent records of this board and that a suitably engrossed copy be forwarded to Sergeant Ed. It's adopted this the employee by the board. And I do want to mention that there was Sergeant Patty's prior service on the board was also duly noted, and resolution prepared for that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Is there a motion to approve the resolution?
This is Ford. Move approval.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Holly King. Second.
Thank you. Any objections? Hearing no objection, the motion passes. Item G is referral to the Legislative Committee for consideration of a Annuity and Pension Board position regarding resolution adopted by the Common Council requesting state legislation regarding the ERS required employer contribution. Mr. Allen, can you explain what that is?
Yes. This item, Mr. Klusman noted at the December board meeting that there was a resolution adopted by the City of Milwaukee. First went through the Jubilee Committee and then to the full council for the city's annual legislative priorities package that went to Madison. And we thank Mr. Klusman for his attention to those details. Very much appreciated, Mr. Klusman. And so there's an exhibit in your packet, and the legislative package is quite lengthy. It's over 100 items. So I excerpted just the relevant one here that Mr. Klusman noted. And the idea is that this is being referred to the legislative committee so the board, so the committee, and then later the full board can decide what position, if any, they want to take on this. It appeared, and this is all the detail we have on this. I did talk to Kimberly Montgomery last week to see if there was anything further, you know, any details about this, because I know everybody was interested. It's just one sentence that says that the city is seeking legislation to allow cities of the first class, meaning Milwaukee, to provide the annual employer contribution at an amount that is either less or more or less than the actuarial determined amount, okay? So the upshot of this is it would give the city flexibility. The current charter does not provide for flexibility. It provides that, as I've said before, under 36 of weight, it says, thou shalt pay whatever the actuary says. And this provision would allow the city to deviate from that, or at least it would be some sort of enabling legislation. I guess I mentioned last time, since there was so much interest, that we would put it up for a referral to the legislative committee so that committee could deliberate over it and, you know, bring it to the full board. So that's all I have to say about this, if there's any questions or comments.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman?
Yes, Mr. Klusman, go ahead.
Well, just to start out, the comment on the upshot of this being flexibility, let's be adults and not fool ourselves that that whole term in there about paying more or less is a red herring. They're not going to pay more. They're seeking to pay less. Let's not fool ourselves or anybody listening. Secondly, I thought about this at length in the ensuing time since I brought this up, and it seems that the simplest way to go about this, because we, you know, we're busy enough, board members, and this really isn't our creation, but following my bringing this up at the last meeting, Alderman Kovac commented that, you know, he didn't see it in that document, which was, you know, large, and I believe him. But his comments were that, you know, he agreed with us on this issue, and I'm sure he'll fill us in when I'm done speaking. But it doesn't seem sensible for us to start to go all out with a lobbyist or doing a whole lot of work on this when this, again, was a council resolution by a proposal by the administration. And since we have a council member on our board, it's sensible that a modification could be entered. And from how that works, I'm sure it could get some co-sponsors, because Alderman Murphy often reminds the public on his tenure here at the pension board, so he's acutely familiar with the importance of funding a pension system. And I would assume that he would have not much problem getting the council president who appointed him to this board's ear on his appointment. So the end result there is that I'm suggesting that possibly we just ask that they reconsider that. And again, in the volume of that document, maybe all the aldermen didn't look at it all that close either. And in second glimpse and an explanation from a serving board member as to why that may not be the best course, we could short circuit this and save ourselves a lot of work. And then if they double down and decide they really want to go through with that, well then we have to do what we have to do. But that would be my thought.
Any further comments?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Alderman Kovac?
Yeah, I didn't like the way this was done, sort of slipped in without consultation by the mayor and his legislative team. The comments at the last meeting on the merits. And frankly, I agree with the approach suggested by the executive director that they should go through our legislative committee. And frankly, as a board, this is probably the biggest question we will have in front of us in the next couple of years and probably ever in the existence of this board. As fiduciaries, we're all committed to all recipients of this system and doing everything we can to ensure that payments continue to be made. And if there's an existential threat to the city, then there is an existential threat to the pension system. So I do not disagree with, I'll speak for myself. And so if this board and we are actuarially obligated to cite a number, we don't yet know what that number will be in 2023, but if that number is high enough, it's an existential threat to ourselves. And I think we need to be realistic that there are risks in both directions. And I think most of the board would agree with me on that. And I just want to state that for the record.
Thank you, Alderman. Yeah, I think the flying argument here is the rather odd way the legislative request is phrased. One would think that a better way to phrase it would be to ask for assistance in funding the pension fund. But the thing with the legislature is, you know, you could ask for one thing, you may wind up with something else. But as I understand, the request here before the board is to refer this matter to the legislative committee. And I assume that's so that the committee can keep track of this and keep us informed as to what is occurring on this file, if anything does does occur. Is that your understanding, Mr. Grossman?
No, I think it came up that it could be referred to legislative, which wouldn't, it isn't a bad single piece, but there should also be, as I brought up at the last meeting, we can't just sit here and watch as the city lobbyist goes to Madison and lobbies to underfund our system, which we are fiduciaries to ensure, just as Mr. Kovac just stated, ensure it's funded, and then just report back to us. That seems foolish that, you know, that to just sit and watch and see what happens. We're obligated to take some action to preserve the fund and the fund's interest. And that's why if the city's going to continue down this road, I just offered a path that possibly they reconsider, but if that apparently isn't of interest to the aldermen, then we need to have our constituents, just as the city is lobbying for its constituents, I guess, in their mind, we need to lobby for our members' best interest that such a modification to state law would not come to pass, because that would be against their interest. We just can't sit here and do nothing and watch and monitor that committee. That's the most foolish.
Oh, you cut out, Mr. Grossman. I didn't hear the end of your statement.
I pretty much covered it. I just said that to sit here and watch and do nothing would be the most foolish thing we could do. And it's neglectful of our responsibilities.
Mr. Chairman, so Mr. Allen, I just as a point of information for the trustees to consider, the purpose of that committee is not only to monitor legislation, but in terms of the board rule, if the board wants to take a position on an issue, as Mr. Grossman is suggesting, which I think is also highly appropriate just for the record, then this committee would deliberate and make a recommendation to the full board. That's kind of the process that's outlined in the board rules. That's why this is important for all. That's all.
Jerry, I would be for that we'd refer to committee to create a position on the matter and then communicate that position, possibly via letter or whatnot, to the state legislators. That would be a good option. So yeah, in that regard, it goes to committee, and rather than I didn't make this comment, someone else made the comment of just monitoring, but yes, definitely. With that, in closing, I would hope if this is a committee referral that goes to committee and then gets acted on, whereas over the years, I've noticed things go to our committees and stagnate there for 3 years. We have to have committee hearings and move forward. And that would be up to whoever Mr. Conrad appoints to run that legislative committee, but we don't know who that is.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Coulson. I'm looking at carefully at the resolution. It does say referral to the legislative committee for consideration of the New England Pension Board position regarding resolution adopted. So I think it does include the duty to formulate a position. So I would suggest we should approve the referral to the committee, and we can put on the next agenda a report from the committee, and that way we would be able to keep tabs on what is occurring and not let it sit.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
You know, I think we're going to be discussing this for years, so I don't know that it's worth completely having too much back and forth today until we've gone to committee and gone through more of the process. But I do think it's important. There's some statements made by our fellow trustee that they've been made over and over again in many, many meetings, using words like neglectful, bringing up our fiduciary duties, alleging that unless we get the full amount from the city, no matter what, we have some violation of our fiduciary duty, which if the full amount is something the city has the ability to pay, I would agree is true. But as fiduciaries, we have to think about risk, upside risk, downside risk, catastrophic risk. When we look at our investments, we don't just look within the universe of, we look at outside the bell curve scenarios, okay? And we have been painted, we have been given scenarios, the entire board, all trustees know this. We have been given scenarios that include numbers that would forever change the city in ways that it's very hard to predict. And because of how this fund is linked to the city, we as fiduciaries would be neglectful if we neglected to consider the risk of what would happen to the city if the number is really high. We need to consider that risk and have a plan for it. I agree with the chair, the newly elected chair, that really, that if we're going to ask the state for anything, it should be for money. If we're going to ask the feds for anything, it should be for money, because this fund is doing as best we can with investments, but our investments, based on our current discount rate, are not fully funding us, and so then we turn to the city. That's our funding source. But if that number is really high, we have a problem. And as fiduciaries, if we don't acknowledge that problem and act like it's simple, then we are being neglectful. And I'll say that again and again, and I will not allow that charge to go unanswered. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kovac. Well, I agree that what our fiduciary duty is not a simple question in this area. And it really can't be answered kind of in the abstract. It has to be addressed in the question of, you know, the facts that you're actually dealing with. And that involves both the financial position of the board and the financial position of the board sponsor. And at some point, I'm certain we're going to have to address that question based on those facts. But I think the facts we have now, it's really too premature to decide what our duty is. But I don't think it's clearly one way or the other, you know, in all factual situations. So is there any more discussion on this issue? If not, I'll ask for a motion to approve the referral. Yes, go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Klusman, one more time.
Sure.
Yeah, I just have to respond to that last comments by Mr. Kovac and ask that Patrick's on the line and he schedule as soon as possible another fiduciary training for the board, because I have been on the board now for, this is my eighth year, and I'm looking at the presentations that have been presented to me over the years, and they're consistent. And they do not obey what he just said. So I think we as a board need a refresher about what this means, because just because he's saying it doesn't make it true. What I have here from the city attorney's office does not say those same things. So we need to update that. We have a new board member. We have several other relatively new board members. And we have board members that have been here for a while that say one thing and another, so we all need change. This is important for us. The one thing that is true is this is going to be talked about.
Thank you, Mr. Klusny. I expect it will be talked about, and I expect it will be controversial, or I should say there will be a lot of controversy over it.
Patrick, to get the date for this training, this fiduciary training, out there early so that we have full attendance, because again, and it's my experience, I've been at our board fiduciary training and the whole board has not been there. And that is an important date that no one can miss.
Mr. Allen, do you know when we usually schedule this?
Well, normally it's done in October, but we had a deputy city attorney was preparing to retire and some problems with the election and the convention before that. So Mr. McLean has been preparing his presentation since October. He's ready, I believe, to bring it to the board either next time or the month after that. Patrick, are you on the line this morning? Apparently not, but he and I have had multiple conversations about this throughout the recent week.
Yeah, I am here, Mr. Chair, Assistant City Attorney Patrick McLean. Jerry's correct. I'll echo all of his comments, and I'd be happy to get something scheduled as soon as possible.
Good, and Patrick, while you're on the line, and let's endeavor to change this ongoing policy of doing it in October when we know that we see new board members regularly on January 1. That's our terms run, so board members should not be left to work 10 months, make decisions fund for 10 months before they receive this important training. It should almost be done on like January 1st or 2nd, and we that have been here always use that pressure. Let's move that.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to hold the training whenever the board feels it's appropriate.
Thank you.
All right, we're getting a little far afield from where
I've been. Mr. Chair?
Yes?
I welcome that, and I've already made the request to, I believe, through staff, but I'll just make it publicly now. I would welcome that training specifically include commentary on all of the different risks we have to consider, and specifically this question we discussed today, whether the fiscal solvency of the sponsor is part of our fiduciary responsibility. I would encourage Mr. McLean to include a specific opinion or range of opinions, if it comes to a range of opinions, on that exact topic.
Okay, thank you, Alderman. I think we're, I would venture to say, I doubt if there's any objection to having the fiduciary training either at the next meeting or the meeting thereafter, depending upon when Mr. McLean believes that he's prepared to give it. But we don't have that on the agenda here, so I will leave that for Mr. Allen. And as chair, I will endeavor to get it on the agenda at the first possible moment or first possible meeting. What we have before us is a referral to the Legislative Committee for consideration of the newly pension board's position regarding resolution adopted by the Common Council requesting state legislation regarding ERS required employer contribution. Do we have a motion on that issue? Is there a motion to approve?
Mr. Klusman, I will.
Mr. Klusman moves to approve. Is there a second?
Mr. Bell will second.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any objections? No objections. The motion passes. The next item is item number 8, medical report. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your package, you have a normal monthly report coming from the medical council and the medical panel. The first page is the medical panel, and these were all re-exams, and they were all approved. There were 5 of them. The second page has to do with the medical council approvals report, and there's only one person on there, Gordon Matthews. It was a new application. Duty disability, and he's from our DPW. This was approved by the medical council for recommendation to the board to award the benefit to this gentleman. The third page is a list of the denials, the denial recommendations, be specific, from the medical council, and we have 4 people on here. Christopher Nellander, who's with DPW, Jason Rodriguez, who's a detective with the Milwaukee Police Department, Darren Jones, who's a firefighter with the fire department, and Hugo Rojas, who is with DNS, and these were all new applications, and they were all recommended for denial by the medical council. One of them was a duty death. One was ordinary, that was Jason Rodriguez. The other was a duty disability at 75%, Christopher Nellander. So those are the reports for this month, and we do need a resolution or a motion to adopt the medical council's recommendations.
All right, thank you. Do we have a motion to approve the medical council's recommendations?
Move approval.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. And we have a second. Thank you. We have a second. Any objections? Hearing no objections, matter is approved. The next item is item 9, unfinished business. The first item, legal opinion and service request, pending legal opinions. Mr. McLean.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am happy to report that the long-awaited fire men's and policemen survivorship fund opinion is complete, but unfortunately, due to its signing and release date, it wasn't included in the board packet, and consistent with the board's prior requests that opinions be provided along with the original packet materials, we elected to hold the opinion until the next meeting, but it is signed and completed and prepared for the board's review. The board will also note that there is a pending opinion in regards to the board's fiduciary obligations in relation to plan sponsor funding, so very germane to what we were just speaking about, and that will be forthcoming. That is on the front burner, please rest assured. As to the remaining requests, I'd be happy to answer any questions that any board member has.
Are there any questions for Mr. McLean? All right, hearing none, thank you for your report. Next item is legislative requests pending and proposed legislation. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first item is a substitute resolution. This is the authorizing city departments to expend monies appropriated for the 2021 budget. This is an annual housekeeping item that basically put the city budget into effect, and the file was adopted in December by the county council on the 15th. The second item is the communication from the city controller relating to the audit of the ERS data center controls. There was a this discussion on the 13th regarding this audit and by the ANO, and the audit actually was completed, and there were a number of audit points. The controller was present on the board. She could comment further if she wanted to, but from our perspective, man, we got a clean bill of health, relatively speaking. They did have there were a couple of I wouldn't call them audit points, but there were a couple of recommendations. One had to do with replacing a fire extinguisher that was out of date and as of 2019, which the management agrees to. We simply have to give our management response, but that was the latest item on this report. And then the next one, communication from the Employees Retirement System by the Department of Administration. I have to put this in my executive director's report, so if you don't mind, I'm just going to go ahead and read that portion of it. This was a fairly unusual item, with kind of short notice, just a few days actually, and I was summoned on just, as I said, a few days notice by the Finance and Personnel Committee, provide jointly with the Budget Office update on the status of the ERS as a follow from the 2020 budget hearing. It turned out that what this meeting was really all about was the Personnel Committee wanted to kind of grill the budget director about their views on putting together a plan to address the looming pension contribution massive increase in 2023. The session was originally posted for closed session for legal reasons, but I requested of Alderman, the chair of that committee, that he permit the ERS testimony to be an open session for the sake of transparency. And so he agreed to that. Fortunately, I presented some slides, which I attached to my report this month. You can see that when we get to that part of it. And I presented these slides regarding the ERS financial status at year-end, and also the remarkable turnaround in investment results in 2020 following the panic in the capital markets during the first quarter. It was due to the pandemic. The Meridian Pension Board should be really congratulated in this regard. At the about the low water mark on this, I believe we were down 22%, and we finished the year, as David reported earlier this month. I think the number was the estimated number was 6.6%. At the time I talked to the F&P, we thought it was about 6.5. So a remarkable turnaround from what was a catastrophic loss to actually a pretty respectable gain at year end of over 6%. So I think the board is to be congratulated for sticking with the discipline of our investment policy when others in the market were panicking. And it was sort of a historic one-month drawdown in the stock market. Is something very unusual. You don't see it very often. It's one of the few times I've ever seen it. Mr. Langer was present at my request, also a colleague of Echo, and from Kavanaugh McDonald, our actuarial firm. They graciously volunteered to present the actuarial funding projections from their latest valuation, which they did. They included a couple slides on that. Larry also provided an example of how limiting the employer contributions to the fund would not result in ever paying down the unfunded liability over the long term. And it would not also be in keeping with actuarial standards of practice. You made that very clear. I included another slide in the deck which shows what the charter requirements are. And the lawyers were on hand to speak to it. From my perspective, the charter requires that the plan sponsors pay what the actuary says in his report. And I think the lawyers did speak briefly to this, but they reserved their comments, as Rudy said earlier, for any specific fact situations that are presented. And again, I did include a copy of the slide deck in my report, and there's also a link along to the video of the F&P discussion. It's it was the very last item, and it was an open session, so anybody that wants to see it, and just put that link if they haven't already seen it. It's on the legislative system. And what you have to do is scroll down on the left side of the page to the last item on the page and then click that item. We did send it out electronically so you can do that. But that's what this item was all about. It was sort of a last minute request to give an update on the pension plan status as a follow up from the budget precinct. And I did also lastly include a copy of Alderman Murphy's letter that was in the file to the budget director. As I mentioned, this is what that meeting was all about. The Alderman was seeking to find out exactly what the administration's plan is on this item. They haven't, they haven't apparently put their plan together yet or informed the council. So it was about an hour of session, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that anybody has about it. Thank you. Then on the rest of this report, part three, pending legislation for committee referrals. Today we talked about the pension contribution is still on the list, as is the outside earnings test, which will be taken up with the legislative committee at the next meeting, along with the last item for report to the legislative committee having to do with the city visa legislative proposal. And that's really it for this report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. I did view the your appearance before the council committee, and I think you did a very good job representing the PRS. The next item is unfinished business.
Sir, Mr. Chair, Mr. Glusman.
Excuse me, yes?
Mr. Glusman here. Yeah, Jerry said that if anybody's got any questions, but then you went on to something else, so I'm just waiting for that opportunity.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
Jerry, I saw this meeting, and I guess one of the things that didn't come out in the meeting, looking at your presentation, slides 8, 9, and 10, which is this new policy that I guess in these few days notice they gave you, you must have inserted into your presentation, because pretty much your presentation is stuff we've all seen actuarial evaluation and your budget presentations and things, but that slide intent seems to be new. Or not new.
It's not a policy, though. It's not a policy. This was an example that the actuary gave to illustrate that if you look at the contribution, the underfunding never goes away.
Yeah, it's the slides that were created in your presentation that cap the city's contribution regardless of what the actuary would determine and what that would cause, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. One of the things that it didn't hear in the hearing was particularly on slide 8 where it shows two different glide paths for the future, one in blue and one in red. The blue being operating going forward under a new proposed scheme of funding with a cap, and the red line being the current process.
That's not proposal. It's not really a proposal. It was an illustration to illustrate the point that if you don't fund according to what the actuary says, that the underfunded liability doesn't go away. It was an example. It's not a proposal by anybody.
Okay, well, Okay, well, I'm only saying that because the slide says proposed, and it says proposal. So that's where I'm getting that terminology. That's not mine. That's on the slide.
I know. And Tom, as you mentioned before, words matter. So I actually took that word out of the slide. You're not looking at the next slide. Before the meeting, I corrected that slide so that it would say modeled, not proposed. Okay, that was the actuary's work. He said that because the budget office told him to made a comment about capping it at 110 million. So he used the word proposal. It is not a proposal. In fact, the purpose of the whole meeting was to get the budget director to come up with a proposal, which he hasn't done yet. So I want to clarify that for everybody, that it's not a proposal. It's simply an illustration of what happens when you look at the employer contribution. It results in bad things happening. We don't get we don't get rid of the liability. And that doesn't meet standards of practice, and it's contrary to the city charter, which I hope to be very clear in my presentation. And go ahead, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
But good, Jared, it's good we're airing this out because something happened then, because the presentation has the word proposal and the one that was emailed with our packet still has the word proposal in it. So I like your use of model better. That would have gone over much better.
Well, I'm glad you pointed out. If you go to the Legistar, you'll see there's a revised set of slides that was put in the file. I put them in there about an hour before the presentation because I noticed that the word proposed was in there and I didn't like it. Let me just go. Maybe we printed off the wrong one for the board meeting, but the one that's the final revised version of it says, I'm looking at the slide 10. It does say modeled, but maybe one of the earlier ones I have say modeled. Tom, you must have printed off the original, because the final ones all say modeled in my slide deck that I heard burning that was sent out of the pack. So I'm sorry for the confusion on that, but it really is just modeling, not proposing it. And this 110 million was actually the budget director's sort of idea that he's been throwing around, and he asked the actuary to value it to see what the impact would be. This was a joint communication file, so I just put it on a slide deck. But my point in doing so was so that the actuary could say, look, it doesn't stick to practice, it doesn't get rid of liability. So thank you for pointing that out. If you have the old version of it, I'll be happy to send the new copy of it. And Janice, on the line, she will do that right away.
Yeah, it's good that we all know that, just in case one of the board members gets a hold of what, since there's two iterations floating around, all I care about is that we're all, as a board, on the same page. Secondarily, that slide 8 with the two lines, that blue line, the modeled mountain as modeled, that mean blue line that never moves up or down. I mean, it moves up slightly, but that's expecting that all other assumptions are met.
That is correct. That is correct, including that we got 7.5% return in 2020, which we did not get.
Exactly, and then going forward into the future years that we projected there. And I'm only saying this because when you present into the lay people, I'm sure Alderman Murphy did, and he should be applauded for asking and demanding some plan from the administration that had none. That maybe for the future should be pointed out that, you know, that blue line is not static. That is dependent upon us achieving. And as we all know as members with our approval of 3A late last year, our experts are telling us that our 7.5 number is a pipe dream because their projections are much lower.
You're right. This is actually why I asked Larry to present these slides, because I didn't want to present anything that looked like the ERS was suggesting that, you know, look at the contributions. Larry did actually mention, although sometimes it's hard to follow everything he says, but he did mention that it was dependent on all the assumptions being met. And that there was just so much discussion that went on that not everybody probably picked up on that. But he did say that, and that's very correct that all of their slides here were based on the 2020 valuation, including the assumption contained there. Your point's very well taken.
Yeah, okay. And then just last point is, in the future, when you get these last minute notices, I would appreciate that you email it out to the board, and that would only take a few minutes, or have a staffer do it, because I had the good fortune to stumble upon the meeting, and I know that Mr. Conrad was there, and obviously Mr. Kovac, and I think Ms. King, through her regular work, was in there, but not all of the board members were obviously aware of it or able to participate, and they deserve that too, to see. I mean, it's nice you sent us the link to watch it and review, but I think we all deserve to see it and be notified when something like this comes up, so we can, as board members.
That's a good point, Mr. Bluesman. I certainly want this presentation to be transparent. That's why I asked for it to be an open session. And your suggestion is a good one, and I will hear to him. Thank you very much for making it.
And I appreciate that. Thank you also for pursuing it in open session, because it is a significant public interest. So thank you for that, Jared.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Alderman.
Yeah, thank you. This has been a good discussion, and as is well known, like Alderman Murphy before me, I wear two hats. You know, I have a fiduciary duty on this pension board when I vote on the board, and I also have take an oath to support the city and the state and federal constitutions, and I represent the city, the plan sponsor. And I agree that Finance Chair Murphy's asking the mayor for a plan or the budget director for a plan is a reasonable request. I would just point out that as someone who's, I think, gone through 13 city budgets now, Chairman Murphy's gone through like way more than 13, so he knows this too. I mean, there's only so many different shapes such a plan could take. And if there's other shapes the plan could take, that I don't know about, I would want to hear them. But I'll just point out that if a payment ends up being, you know, right, you know, ends up doubling or tripling the current payment, I think the only way to keep up with that would be to borrow. I mean, Jerry's, I think, talked more about pension obligation bonds. I don't love that scenario, because now a bank owns you, basically. I mean, I'm being a little dramatic when I say that, because we borrowed over $100 million a year as it is, and, it, borrowing money is, Mayor Zeidler was against it, but every mayor since then has done it, and it happens, and obviously if you can't make the payments, then the bank's got you. But once you start borrowing significant enough amounts, you potentially lose your sovereignty to a bank. That's always a risk anytime you borrow anything. But I would say that the only way to do it without borrowing is too massive and without new revenue. I mean, new revenue obviously is the way out, but the only people that can give us new revenue are the state and the feds. So if the state and the feds don't give us new revenue, or if David doesn't magically produce, you know, 8.5% for a while, the only way the city can make the payment is to spend less on other things. And I just to illustrate, we made us, you know, some of my colleagues asked for scenarios, you know, due to the protests which had started because of George Floyd and other matters. The request was made, and there is a memo which I can provide to this board. It's a matter of public record. Some members of the community asked for a $75 million cut to the police department, and so other members asked for $25. So it was modeled in both directions. What would a $25 million cut to the police budget versus a $75 million cut? And I don't want to, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, so don't quote me. I don't want to be quoted on this, but the ballpark was, the numbers were huge. So, I mean, you know, $75 million, the percentage of loss of officers would have been much higher than the percentage cut, because the way the layoffs would work is, you know, the least expensive would be the first layoff. So I forget the exact number, but it was less than half, but more than a third of the department would have to be eliminated to meet a $75 million cut. Now, that's just looking at the police department. The police department's only about half the budget, so in theory, you might be able to find city needs in other departments too, right? So, but I'm just pointing that out, that But the devastation of the other departments would be similar. So will the garbage get picked up? Will the streetlights be on? You know, you name it. So I mean, having it, like, yes, we need to start preparing for that doomsday, but that's the plan. There's no other plan. I mean, you either borrow money, you lay massive amounts of employees off, or I hope there's a third answer, right? But Jerry, is there a third way out, just from the city perspective?
Revenue is new engine revenue and revenue increase. And so I have another comment to make about that before the meeting's over, Alderman, but you go ahead and finish your statement. All right, are you there, Alderman Kovac?
I was pretty much done. I was just trying to get some details so people know that the city has been thinking about this. Or similar scenarios for different reasons. And part of the reason, I think, I don't want to put words in Dennis's mouth, but nobody wants to say it out loud. I mean, I just did, you know, because that's the reality. I mean, unless we get new revenue, there's no good choice.
Yeah. So I wanted also to, in a spirit of full disclosure and transparency, I wanted to inform the board of something that I just heard about, well, it was probably Friday or Thursday before the weekend. I got a call from one of the bargaining units that said that they had conversations with unnamed state legislators that told them that there is some discussion working along behind closed doors in the legislature about the sales tax increase for the city and the county, and pension reform proposals that are tied to it. And one of the provisions, one of the strings attached to any sales tax proposal for the city and the county would be the closure of the city and the county pension plan to new hires in favor of sending all the new hires to the Wisconsin retirement system. And as soon as I heard this, I recognized what the financial implications would be for the city. And they're not favorable. Okay, when you close a plan, you have to pay up. You have to pay your check. You have to pay the unfunded liability over a very short period of time. And if the action process is 10 years, and the contributions become truly astronomical, not only do you have to pay in 10 years, but they're probably going to require a lower discount rate based on, you know, Callum's presentations earlier this fall that showed that investment return expectations are not all that great for the next 10 years. So instead of talking about a doubling of the contribution, the numbers, the actuaries tell us it's a little more like $300 plus million annually for each of 10 years. if the plans are closed as a condition of granting the city and the county the sales tax increase. So I want the board to know that, and I certainly pass that back to the budget director so that the administration can make it clear to the legislator when this issue comes up that closing our plans does not help the city afford to pay its contributions. 10 years of extraordinarily high contributions would result if you close the plan. And I mentioned this now only in the spirit of letting everybody know what we're hearing. And, well, the legislature apparently has not held hearings on this yet, but maybe there will be some, and we'll all get a chance to watch. So that's my only further comment about, you know, additional revenue sources and the strings that might come with that.
Okay, Jerry, this is Rudy Conrad. I think the city has to make clear to the legislature, you know, how perilous this is. If you look at the cuts that Alderman Kovac was discussing, it's not really just a matter of cuts alone, because those kind of cuts would kind of set off a downward spiral, which could cause things to collapse very quickly as people are dissatisfied with the service or their safety, and they get to move out. And you know, it's this how even very things that appear on the surface to be successful and solid start crumbling very quickly. So be fortunate if the legislature really recognize how perilous the situation is.
I think that's correct. And in fact, in that request for the city attorney's opinion, I did mention the potential for destabilizing the delivery of the central city services to the degree that would threaten the economic viability of the plan sponsor and its ability to continue funding our plan. So I completely agree with you, Mr. Chairman. These things do not exist in a vacuum. Newton's third law of motion is for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction, and that's what happens if you start to cut, you know, the police department by 25% or the other departments for that matter. It just becomes a spiral downward.
All right, any further comments on this matter? All right, the next item under unfinished business is item C, the executive director's report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I gave you most of it having to do with administration, as long as we started at the top. On the personnel update, we're of course continuing to work with our colleagues on DDR to fill the operations director position. I guess Melanie has advised that they posted it, and we're waiting for the applications to come in from the public and from the city employees. On member services, we have 30 new retirees on the December payroll. We're expecting about 51 for the month of January. And we're still continuing, of course, to do our new employee orientation sessions online. And I understand that DER is, after you know, 10 months of COVID, they're beginning to restructure their process as well so that they can do a good job of new employee orientation. On the financial services, the 1099 forms, these are the tax reporting forms for our members that will be going out at the end of this month to certain members that receive 1099Rs, many of them. They particularly completed its preliminary field work. And we did, as was mentioned earlier, receive the employer contribution from the city of $71 million and $8 million going to the reserve fund. I guess I should say, attached to my report also are the member services statistics for 2019 and 2020. We did have a pickup in retirements, about 50 more this year, service retirements, which is not unexpected, given that there were a couple of 300 plus people eligible alone in the police department for retirement. And we included a customer satisfaction survey. And I also have the goals and objectives for 2020 and 2021 that people can review at their leisure and come back to us or make any comments they wish to today or at any particular day for that month. And since the meeting has gone on pretty reasonable, the time I won't belabor any more than that. Pardon me. I've got a little sick this morning. So that concludes my report.
So, thank you, Mr. Allen. Any questions on the executive director's report?
This is Molly King. I have a quick question for Jerry. Jerry, did you say that there are 50 more retirees in 2020 that will work through this year, or did I miss that?
Yeah, there's a, in your packet, Molly, there's a report that happens across all of it. That is member services statistics, and the requirements we had was 2019, 591 retirements, and 2020 we had 644. So that's a little bit above 50. It's, I guess, 53. 53 additional retirements. And, not unexpected, but I know there were some, they were all asked to pass the Quebec teleconvention. We had several of the younger who were eligible to retire, so it's not surprising that we had some people apply to retire.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I should mention in that regard, we've had a tremendous pickup and bound of our members and beneficiaries that have died already this year. We had, right on the first day after the first of the year, we had 20 deaths reported. Now, of course, over the holiday, things don't get reported during the holiday, so that can account for some of it. We've had an accelerated number of deaths, and I do want to thank my colleagues in the Member Services Group for handling all of these matters expeditiously over the phone and on point. The COVID pandemic. So thanks for bringing this up again, Molly. I appreciate it. It, in my opinion, done a pretty good job of managing to make this transition seamless into the emergency response that we've been in for the last several months.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Allen. Any other questions on the executive director's report? All right, hearing none, the remainder of the matters on our item 10 are informational. Does anyone have any issue to discuss in reference to those items? All right.
Mr. Chair, this is ACA Pat McLean.
Go ahead, Mr. McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention to the board that we were fortunate to have a couple of favorable court decisions over this last period that I wanted to highlight in case any of the board members wanted a copy of the decision. We got a favorable published decision from the Court of Appeals in regards to the appropriate duty disability standard to be applied for firemen and policemen, which is a bit of a game changer down at the ground level that the board doesn't often see this, but it can be a bit of a knife fight in these administrative hearings over what the proper standard is. And we thankfully now have our first published decision touching on this subject in over a decade. So we also did get a favorable circuit court opinion in regards to the statutory presumption of respiratory disease for firefighters. That is still subject to an appeal potentially, but I just wanted to highlight that for the board members in case anybody wanted a copy of the decision, since they are not only welcome, but also will be somewhat transformative for these appeal hearings moving forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McLean. I'd also note that item two under the informational are the conferences. So if you have some time and interest in attending any of those, you can take a look at those, if not Mr. Allen, know if you're interested. Any more comments or questions on the informational items?
Mr. Klusman?
Yes, Mr. Klusman.
Yeah, Patrick, I'll take those. If you could email them to me, I'd appreciate that. Retired folks need stuff to read.
Absolutely, will do.
All right, any further comments or questions on the informational matters? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Call the motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Klusman.
Thank you, Mr. Klusman. Motion to adjourn. The meeting is seconded. It's 10:35 a.m. and we are adjourned.